I have been using the New Living Translation far, far more. And I'm glad that Junho gave his blessing to that, because I didn't want to be doing something on the sly. It is a magnificent translation. That and God's Word translation, what most of this comes from. And I more and more like the New Living Translation. It still has some of the flavor. The CEV is great for individuals who want the meat, but it leaves out a lot of the beauty of the description of all atoms. It's pretty basic. From the beginning until now, mostly, Solomon has been saying that all things are useless. Now, I don't think he was saying that things are totally worthless. It's when we start making them the focal point of our life, they become terrible things because it draws us away from God. How many of you remember the first car you got, particularly you guys? Do you remember what you had to give up in order to get that car? Do you remember what you had to do in order to keep tires on it? I remember one of my first cars. I burned off the back wheels in 3,000 miles. It was at that point when I bought my first set of tires that I realized it costs more than gasoline to drive a car. I remember buying, after Renee and I started teaching and we had a few dollars, 72 Grand Torino. You remember those? Brown with a chocolate brown top. Absolutely gorgeous automobile. I think I washed it 4 times a day. We struggled. I think it was 6 hours I negotiated with Strother Ford to get the payments down, 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 so I could afford it. Love that automobile. When I bought the red truck, I happened to be in a position I could write a check for it. It means essentially nothing in comparison, because I'm not having to sacrifice anything in order to have it. But we did the 72 Grand Torino. Those things we have to sacrifice for mean a lot more to us. Attaining everything you want will not bring you happiness. I know a lot of people who have everything they want except happiness. Too many people, they set their sights on one thing. They attain that thing, and it's not what they thought it, not what, it doesn't give them what they thought it was going to give them. They just knew, if I can only have that, that I'll be happy. Most of us in the beginning had to struggle to even feed our families. In Atlanta, I had to drive to work, and when it was raining, that meant the streets were filled with idiots. I think they all went home and got their dumber brother to come out and drive around the streets of Atlanta with them. Oh, you just don't know. No, you don't. If you've never driven in Atlanta, you've never driven. And when you haven't driven there with it raining, don't go. Just don't go for that experience. You don't want to. One of the things I fear that we've taught our young people is that the acquisition of things is what brings happiness. And where you and I sacrifice greatly in order to buy that first car, they grow up with them. There was a visitor at Benjamin E. Mays High School in Southwest Atlanta. That is the affluent black section of Atlanta. And the guy was walking through the parking lot, and he said to his guy, "Wow, the teachers here must have stipends to be able to drive BMWs and sports cars." He said, "Oh, no, no, no. Teacher's parking lot is over there. This is the student's parking lot. BMWs, they were driving Mercedes. They were driving what you and I may work all of our lives and not get. What happiness do they know? They didn't have to sacrifice for it. And they enter adulthood believing that it's always been this way. Therefore, it's always going to be that way." And they grow up with an attitude of, "I deserve it." When we do start working and we start attaining a little bit and we finally get enough, what do we work on then? More. Remember? We want a little bit more, and we want a little bit more. And once we start getting more, there is never enough of the more. When we get enough, we can sigh. And then, well, I want a little bit more. And then I want a little bit more. You never get enough of the more. As you well know, two people have affected my life more than anybody except my mother and dad. Uncle David slept in the driveway of a parking lot with a garage. He slept in the driveway on a cot in order to go to medical school. My grandfather grew up without parents, both dead at 1.5 years old. Orphaned at 1.5 years old. Richest man in the county when he died. But he said, getting here was a lot more fun than being here. And I used to think that was one of the stupidest things I had ever heard in my life. He worked his life in order to attain. He attained it, and it brought him no happiness. He said the only thing you have when you get old is your children. Now, most of you would not in a million years recognize that man. He's Xenophanes of Colophon, a Greek philosopher. And just a brief part of the poem shows the difference in the attitudes then and how they're like today. What do we value in America? Money, entertainment. We want everybody to take care of us. You remember how much this guy signed a contract for? LeBron James, was it $17 million a year? Something like that, with a 10-year contract. Now, I didn't teach math, but that's $170 million. For 10 years' work. And, of course, many of you believe that he's overpaid at that, and I would agree. Up until this point, most of Solomon's teaching has been about watching out for the things we want our heart to have. We start wanting too much, and then he starts giving us a little bit of positive feedback. Before we go into chapter 8, Verse 1, let's pause for a word of prayer, please. Father, I thank you for the opportunity again to stand before this group. I thank you that Solomon taught us so strongly that things are not the answer. If we'll just listen and know that your word is true, maybe we'll quit following those things so strongly. We need to know that your word is the truth, and that your word will guide our lives. In Christ's name, amen. Verse 1, how wonderful, and by the way, I'm going to do this a little bit differently. I'm not going to pause a great deal. When you have a piece of information or a great illustration, stop me. Say, Jerry, I want to point this out. I've got several places where I have, but not a lot. How wonderful to be wise, to analyze and interpret things. Wisdom lights up a person's face, softening its harshness. How many of you know a really wise person? Anybody?
Other than your dad.
Remember when you thought, if you'll just go ahead and plug it in, baby. Remember when you thought he was less than brilliant?
Yeah.
You remember that? You were, okay. Well, that's the way I felt about my grandfather. He was 85, I was 16, and I always said he was not very smart. But then there's never been an 85-year-old man smart enough to tell a 16-year-old boy anything. Now, how do you see your father? Well, I did not sit at my grandfather's feet like I should have and said, tell me about this or tell me about... But he did write a lot of newspaper articles, and I treasured those. We have a tendency to think that older people just don't know anything. And usually, we don't know how smart they are until they're gone. And how I would like to pick my dad's brain just one time, ask him some questions, or my mother's, or others, but you know, they're gone and it's too late. And the best we can do is emulate them and follow the teachings of God. Probably one of the least practiced things in all of man's life. They want to intellectualize, and without using common sense, go ahead and do what they want to do. And they've intellectualized themselves into believing this is the best way. Deep down, they know better. Okay, here he's saying next, by the way, the difference in wisdom and intelligence. Did anybody know there is a difference in wisdom and intelligence?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay, all right. I didn't know whether you remember. Yes. I've known some brilliant men, many of them in college, didn't have a lick of wisdom. They knew a great deal of stuff, but they weren't very smart. Go to the next section, obedience to the king, Ecclesiastes 8, 2 through 8. Obey the king since you vowed to God that you would. Don't try to avoid doing your duty, and don't understand, don't stand with those who plot evil, for the king can do whatever he wants. I think Obama read that. Excuse me, that's editorializing. I'm sorry, it was out of my mouth. I'm sorry. His command is backed by great power. No one can resist or question it. Those who obey him will not be punished. Those who are wise will find a time and a way to do what is right. For there is a time and a way for everything, even when a person is in trouble. Indeed, how can people avoid what they don't know is going to happen? None of us can hold back our spirit from departing. None of us has the power to prevent the day of our death. There is no escaping that obligation, that dark battle. And in the face of death, wickedness will certainly not rescue the wicked. Do you think that there are people who believe that they won't have to face judgment? Do you really believe that they think that, or they just say that? And that's all it takes. I remember we had a couple visited us, about 2 months ago? And June Ho was talking with them after church, and she insisted, "I'm going to heaven because I'm a good person." Nothing about Jesus. She didn't seem to understand the Lord Jesus Christ, but I'm a good person. And it depends on what barometer you're going to use. If you've ever done anything wrong, then you're not a good person. You're a sinner. And, excuse me, go ahead. Oh, what was it, Jack? Oh. Well, got you beat by one. Got two of them. Don't brag to me. The wicked and the righteous. I have thought deeply about all that goes on here under the sun. And by the way, that is a phrase that he uses many, many, many times in Ecclesiastes. We usually think of what word when we think of Ecclesiastes? Vanity, which means breath. But he also uses, I think, under the sun more than any other phrase in the entire book. Under the sun, where people have the power to hurt each other. I have seen wicked people buried with honor, yet they were the very ones who frequented the temple and are now praised in the same city where they committed their crimes. This too is meaningless. We've all seen the bad people. It still goes on. It still goes on. And I don't know why, except that we've lost sight of the one. And we've decided that we get to decide who is good and who is bad. And if we decide that the conduct of this person is acceptable simply because they can hit more home runs, I think A-Rod hit his 600th, I saw it on the crawl on Fox, I don't watch baseball anymore. Was it 600 that he hit? The youngest player in history to hit one at the age of 35. And they think he's wonderful because he can hit a baseball. Well, I have another.
Depends on who your God is.
That's exactly right. And to some people, baseball is their God. That acquisition of a record is their God. When Ty Cobb retired from baseball, he held more records than any other baseball player in history. May have owned more than all others combined. And he was the most hated man in baseball. Guess how many people attended his funeral? 4. Just possibly the greatest ball player of all time. 4 people came to his funeral. He was from Georgia. This is supposed to be more positive tonight. The need for swift justice. When a crime is not punished quickly, people feel it is safe to do wrong. Do you think we're in the midst of that thing right now? When someone is convicted of murder, I'm not sure it's in all states, but in most states, they have to hold the trial again to make sure there were no errors in the first trial. It's an automatic second trial that they get. How many of you have had a father or a mother who held a second trial? I didn't think so. Because you're in church, and that's one of the things that leads you to church, knowing, you know, retribution, justice is coming. But even though a person sins 100 times and still lives a long time, I know that those who fear God will be better off. The wicked will not prosper, for they do not fear God. Their days will never grow long like the evening shadows. I have known people that would cheat you out of every penny you have, and they live well all of their lives. They were never called to task. Nobody ever said, this is wrong, you're not going to do that. Nobody ever said, you're bringing dishonor on the family. Or you're bringing dishonor on me as your brother or your sister. And they lived that way forever without. But when they died, they had to face all those things. It didn't last forever. I think there are those who may not have a conscience. They've become so dull, but 95 to 99%, I think, do know that they're doing wrong when they do it. God just doesn't let, but they may become so dulled to it. Yes. And it doesn't bleed anymore. It doesn't ooze when you do something. It's just so crusty. I did that last time. I can do it this time. And we just don't... I've known people like that, I think. And then I think, do they really believe this is acceptable? How could they? But that's because you and I have a different outlook on life. We have a different world view. Enjoy life. And this is not all that is meaningless in our world. In this life, good people are often treated as though they were wicked, and wicked people are often treated as though they were good. This is so meaningless. We revere some people who are absolute scums of the earth. And then there are people that we tend to... I think the most horrible thing we can do is to mistreat an innocent child. Maybe that innocent child was born in such a manner that because of the parents, we have a negative attitude toward the parent. Don't take it out on the child. The child is not to blame. Love that child as if there was nobody else on this earth. But we have a tendency to spread too much of the parents onto the child. But there are also adults like this. They just don't have a chance in life. I've seen people who life had just beaten, and they needed a hand up, and yet you didn't know how to help them. They tried and they worked, and yet they never could. Maybe God allows that because it keeps our hearts from becoming hard. It's awfully easy to become hard-hearted living in a place like this. I mean, most of the people we know are at least well enough off that they don't have to worry about food or a house, and they drive a night. It's so easy for the heart to become seared like that. One of the things Renee and I prayed when we moved here, don't let us become so caught up with the people we get to know that we forget that there are people. I have a picture of the mountain burning. You remember when the Santa Rita's caught on fire 2 or 3 years ago?
Florida fire.
The what?
Florida fire.
The Florida fire. I have a picture of that fire. But there were people in the Green Valley swimming pool having a good time.
The East Center pool.
And it showed the starkness of the differences. People were being chased out of their homes up there on the mountain. They had to get out for fear of the home. But we were having a good time down in Green Valley. We were in our big old swimming pools. So I recommend having fun, because there is nothing better for people in this world than to eat.
And
I didn't. Now, I got to tell you, I was not snubbing you all at dinner. I always eat in there. I sat down, I looked in here, I saw all those tables, and it didn't cross my mind until I was having dessert. I could have gone in there and eaten with the grown folks. But I always, and I just, so I understand, Jack. Although when you start putting coffee on your Cheerios, give me a call, you need some help. Yes, Bob. I taught in all black schools. I think I had maybe five or six white students in my going on 30 years. And they did idolize those people. They because of what they accomplished. And I'm trying to remember what the one was that they just bragged about. His name was Ice, or I don't remember. But who was it? No, it's not, wasn't Ice-T. It was somebody else. He had a stable. And I don't mean of horses. And they just thought he was the slickest thing in the world because he could walk up to some woman on the street. And slick tongue. Well, I've met some of those too. Say something to help me, please. They want to pardon him because he catches the imagination of some people. That's what it is. Yeah. So I recommend having fun because there is nothing better for people in this world than to eat, drink, and enjoy life. That way, you've been drinking too much. That way they will experience some happiness along with all the hard work God gives them under the sun. In my search for wisdom and in my observation of people's burdens here on earth, I discovered that there is ceaseless activity day and night. I realized that no one can discover everything God is doing under the sun. Not even the wisest people discover everything, no matter what they claim. You've met people who acted like they thought they knew everything. The first thing you need to know is they know almost nothing. Because if they have not been taught, I don't think I started really learning until I was 50 years old. And I finally decided one day, you know, I know a lot of stuff, but I'm really not very wise. I'm not very smart at all. I need to start paying attention and using the information they had. I don't want to know. I don't care. I really don't care. Boy, I sure feel sorry for Jack when he starts cleaning this one up. Go to Ecclesiastes 9:1. Everything is in the hands of God. Now, here he is continuing on that tack of we don't need to worry about our own destiny if we place ourselves in the hand of the correct one. Everything is in the hands of God. The New Living Testament calls, the New Living Translation says, death comes to all. Now, some people act like they're not going to ever die. And the closer I get there, the more I try to remember, it may be tomorrow, or I may not make it until then. Now, I have carefully thought about all this, and I explained it in this way. Righteous people and wise people, along with their accomplishments, are in God's hands. No one knows whether there will be love or hatred. Everything turns out the same way for everyone. All people will share the same destiny, whether they are righteous, wicked, or good, clean or unclean, whether they offer sacrifices or don't offer sacrifices. Good people are treated like sinners. People who take oaths are treated like those who are afraid to take oaths. You ever have anybody die that you just loved? You would do anything in the world to just bring them back for just a few minutes to tell them one more time that you loved them. You ever had anybody die that you were glad they were gone? Well, they're both. I don't know who he was talking about. Don't look at me. I'm not going to find out. Uh, they're going to the same place. They're going to meet the same one. They're going to have the same type of judgment. The outcome may not be the same. But we need to be careful before casting stones, because we're going to meet the same one with the same type of judgment. Our time is coming. This is the tragedy of everything that happens under the sun. Everyone shares the same destiny. Moreover, the hearts of mortals are full of evil. Madness is in their hearts while they are still alive. After that, they join the dead. There's no backing up once you've crossed that threshold. Look, skip down to enjoy life with your wife. That will be 7. My arm has gone to sleep, so I may slip. Go enjoy eating your food and drink your wine cheerfully, because God has already accepted what you've done. Always wear clean clothes and never go without lotion on your head. Enjoy life with your wife whom you love during all your brief, pointless life. God has given you your pointless life under the sun. This is your lot in life, and what you get for the hard work that you do under the sun. Enjoy life with your wife. Now, guys, I know that every one of you thinks that you appreciate your wife. I know you think that. I know that you think I'm a good guy because I truly appreciate my wife. J. Paul Getty, at one time, he and H.L. Hunt had a running battle over which one was the richest. Getty said Hunt was, and Hunt said, no, J. Paul, you're the richest man in the world. J. Paul Getty said he would give all of his money for one good wife. I don't know how many he had, but it was more than one, and I just have a feeling he was looking in the wrong place for a wife. There are still good women out there. I talked with a guy, De Ortega. De Ortega wanted to get married so badly. Ooh, he just couldn't stand it because he wasn't married. And he wanted his wife to at least be a maiden. We have a child present. And he preferred that she have never been kissed. And every night of the week, he went looking for that kind of woman in every bar and saloon. I do believe he was looking in the wrong place. That's not where you find that kind of delightful woman. But every night he went looking. How many of you guys will admit that you married above yourself? Am I the only one that will admit that? No, I'm not the only one. There are some other guys in here. And the rest of you are lying. I remember when I was in my middle teens, Daddy bought me a little black mare, and I was out riding her, and she tripped on something and threw me over her head. And I wasn't very big then, but I landed on my left knee, and I broke it. And I remember, this hurt. You know, I don't like landing all my weight on my left, but I manned up. I did not cry a lick, not one tear. The next summer, I tried out a new piece of riding equipment, a martingale on the horse. The horse had never had it before. She reared up and fell on top of me. And I remember thinking, you know, this horse is heavy. Horses shouldn't be laying around on folk. Folk, get up off me, you horse. Get up. Broke my leg in the same place. But I manned up and I didn't cry, not one tear. When Renee had surgery a couple of months ago, I turned into a whimpering little puppy. I might as well have been beaten every 30 minutes. Not ashamed. We don't appreciate our wives. We don't appreciate most things until we're afraid they might be taken from us. Work with all your might. Whatever presents itself for you to do, do it with all your might, because there is no work, planning, knowledge, or skill in the grave where you're going. Now, What work is there to do while you're laying there in the grave? Unless you come back to life and start trying to dig your way, there's not a lot to do down there, or so I can imagine. Okay. Work with all your might. No matter what you do, do it the very best you can. Now, you may have the ability to make thousands of dollars a week, $10,000 a week, because you have a great skill. Are you any... What? I was going to say, you have the same obligation to tithe. Is your job any more important than the person that goes around and reads your water meter or your electricity meter? What if he reads your electricity meter really wrong? Then you're going to figure out how important his job is. Gary? They think they are. Please don't get me. This can turn into a, never mind. Time and unpredictable events. I saw something else under the sun. The race isn't won by fast runners, or the battle by heroes. Wise people don't necessarily have food. Intelligent people don't necessarily have riches. And skilled people don't necessarily receive special treatment. But time and unpredictable events overtake all of them. No one knows when his time will come. Like fish that are caught in a cruel net, or birds caught in a snare, humans are trapped by a disaster when it suddenly strikes. And that's what I was saying. There are people who are just whipped by life. And I truly believe we need to help them as much as we would help anybody. If they are hurt by life and they just can't get up, we've got to reach down and help them. Now, those who got themselves into that mess in the first place by disobeying God's words, turn to, I hope, I'm guessing at it, 2 Thessalonians 3:10. Anybody find that? Let me know. 2 Thessalonians 3:10, I think. Who has it? Would you read it? Now, that sounds awfully heartless. Bill Mertens and I were out one day about 6 months ago, and I said something about, you know, there was somebody in our family that if they pulled up on the side of the road and said, I'm going to sit right here if you don't give me something to eat, I say, well, don't wait for it too long for me. And he wanted to, well, you know, what would Jesus, he wasn't questioning, what would Jesus? Paul said in his letter to Timothy, if he's not willing to work, let him starve to death. Now, we in our sweet little Christian mode, we have kind of been tricked into believing that we're supposed to be soft in goodness. We're supposed to help anybody who asks for help. Don't owe anybody anything unless they're willing to help themselves. If they can't, then we owe it to them. If they're willing to help themselves, we owe it to them. But if they don't want to work, if they don't want to even get their own food off the tree, let them starve. That's what Paul said. And we've got to get over this thing of thinking we owe the world everything, that we owe what we have worked hard for to those who are refusing to work. And our nation is filled with them. We have grown up 3 to 4 generations of them, and it's destroying us. We should have been reading this scripture all along. Skip down to, and we're going to finish with this. What I was meaning, the first public housing in Atlanta was Techwood Homes. That was the first houses built. They were torn up, and they have just been torn down. There are no more government. It used to have, I think it was 13 clusters of housing for the poor, 13 clusters all over Atlanta. Every one of them's gone. They've all been torn down. Some of those places where those houses were now have million-dollar apartments sitting in the same place. That's wrong, too. It leaves the middle class without a place to live. Not just the poor without a place, but it leaves the middle class without a place. Thoughts on wisdom and folly. I also have seen this example of wisdom under the sun, and it made a deep impression on me. There was a small town with a few soldiers in it, and a powerful king came to attack it. He surrounded it and blockaded it. A poor, wise person was found in that town. I'm at 13 and 14. A poor, wise person was found in that town. He saved the town using his wisdom, but no one remembered that poor person. So I said, wisdom is better than strength, even though that poor person's wisdom was despised, and no one listened to what he said. One should pay more attention to calm words from wise people than shouting from a ruler of fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner can destroy much that is good. What is the most elusive of all human emotions? Gratitude. Of all emotions that the human soul can emit, emote, produce, gratitude is the most elusive. When someone, you're starving to death and someone gives you $10 to go buy some food for your family, by tomorrow you want to forget it because you don't want to remain as a subject of that person. And when you hold gratitude, and that's what politicians do know, that gratitude is the most elusive of all emotions, and that's what he has said here. That one poor man saved the entire town. And what did they do with him the next day? Hated him. Didn't care that he was there. Didn't care anything about him. Okay, I do not want to start on Ecclesiastes 10. We'll try to finish next Thursday night Ecclesiastes 10, 11, and 12. And I may then only hit the highlights, but when we read, when we go through Ecclesiastes, always read those last three or four verses, because if you don't read those, then all of Ecclesiastes has been lost on you, because those tell you what the meaning of life is.